Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. For most of my career in broadcast, I have known and had a great relationship with my guest of today. Kerry, people will want me to mention up front and not slibbered in at the end, as we did the last couple of times, Minister Jimmy Dinahan, that, you know, your football career, having, you know, well, first of all, starting back in 75, Kerry, All-Ireland medalist, you know, 78, 79, 80, and then capped off in 1981 when you captained the team, the Kerry team, and received the GAA All-Ireland All-Star medal.
Well, it was a good period in my life, and it coincides actually with my relationship with New York. I came to New York first playing football in 1973, and it was John Kerry O'Donnell actually who brought me here. He paid for the ticket. I was a student at the time, and he brought me here.
That should go in the Guinness Book of Records.
He brought me here on a number of occasions. I came out with greats like Mick O'Connell, who was at the end of his career at that time, but he still was a big, big player in New York then. Mick O'Dwyer, Donnie Sullivan, and these were all legends at the time. And then we were playing Donegal in the final, but John Kerry had some issues with Donegal Club here in New York at that time, and he brought out two great Donegal players as well, Brian McInniff.
That's right.
And Paddy McShay. So we had all those Kerry greats then, and the two Donegal boys. To be honest with you, I think we won the final, but it was great for the student. I was going to the National College of Physical Education in Limerick, so obviously I could be collected by Mick O'Dwyer on Friday evening when we finished, and I'd be back for the first practical Monday morning. And it was exciting for...
Sure.
Someone as young as that at that time. And then in 73 as well, we had the Cardinal Cushion Games, I remember, for charity, and we played Roscommon here in New York that summer as well, of 73. So that started my relationship with New York, that is still as strong as ever, and I come here on a regular basis. I've been here over the past year on three occasions, and I love the city, and I love the noise of this city, the people of this city, and everything about it. I must say, I've never had one single bad experience in this city. So it's a wonderful place to live, to work, obviously to socialize. It's steeped in culture. It's the cultural hub of the world, now I would say, at this stage. And everybody really wants to come to New York.
Yeah. And you know, when we speak of New York, and we've spoken New York many times in the past, it is New York, but it's also, you know, Jersey, it is Pennsylvania, it is Connecticut, it is all of the states that indeed become very much a part of the cultural scene, particularly the Irish cultural scene.
Very much so, and I'm just using it as a hub on this occasion.
Yes.
As a place just to, I suppose, stay here in Fitzpatrick's. But yesterday, for example, I visited Connecticut, and I was down in Quinnipiac University. I was down at the Famine Memorial there. And I must say...
The Great Irish Hunger Museum, which is the only one, as you know, of its kind in North America.
Yeah, and it's
dedicated.
Very impressive. And I suppose even some of the exhibits they have there, especially the paintings by people Paul Henry, these are quite unique.
Yeah.
And they're just there, and they're in another part of the world. And also, they have a tribute there to the Grey Nuns. And these were the nuns that, in many cases, I suppose, gave their lives for the sick and starving Irish that came over during the famine. And they have a particular tribute in the museum to the nuns, and they have primary sources, letters that were written at that time, reports that were written by the nuns, daily accounts, and they're all in Quinnipiac. And right. They have a very important resource there. And in Christine Keneally, you have one of the top historians on the famine. And also she has a great interest in a Kerryman, Daniel O'Connell. And she's now one of the top experts here in the USA on Daniel O'Connell. And actually, she's doing a book, a further book on Daniel O'Connell. She did a book on Daniel O'Connell and Frederick Douglass. And I suppose what's happening here in America, in Baltimore, it's of relevance now. And so she's doing a further book now on Daniel O'Connell, and also his, more or less, his attitude and his campaign about banning slavery, not only in America, but in all parts of the world. So she's a very significant figure, Christine Keneally, and you're very fortunate to have a historian of her, I suppose, recognition for status here with you in New York.
John Leahy, who is president of Quinnipiac University, and in fact he is the vice chairman of the New York St. Patrick's Day Parade, has to be given credit for the establishment of, first established not only a museum, but a museum indeed dedicated strictly to the famine. Of course, Christine coming in with the institute is great. But I do want to share with you something that is that we have talked about before, and that has a role for the Irish government. The Irish Hunger Memorial in Battery Park City has undergone and has been indeed destabilized to the point where the authority in Battery Park City wanted to move, or wanted us to move, to another segment of another area. And it was with indeed the endorsement of the Irish government, with John Leahy and his commitment indeed to maintain and to bring the Irish Hunger Memorial as it is forward. The announcement which is new is that on October 1st the memorial at Battery Park City will be taken stone by stone, a foundation that will be a lot better, you know, than was there. If we go back to 9/11, with the proximity to 9/11, the buildings came down and walloped what was there. The foundation, obviously, and to add to that, the hurricanes that followed, made it to brought us to the point where it has to be redone. It is. It's going to be rebuilt exactly as it is. We, first of all, we acknowledge and thank the interest and endorsement of the Irish government, and also, obviously, to have John Leahy and Quinnipiac University take over the future management of that is something that's beyond the wildest dream.
Well, no, it's one of the most significant memorials in the world. When I was Minister for Arts and Heritage, one of my responsibilities for was for famine commemoration. So I've seen the memorial, for example, in Boston, in New Orleans.
Yeah.
I went to Philadelphia. Hopefully in the future that there will be a memorial event there to mark the International Famine Memorial, but certainly the one here in New York is very, very significant and very important. and in one of the busiest parts, I suppose, of the world as regards football. Its location is really very important and attracts a huge number of people, obviously, because of the football at that location, and also adds, let me say, to the cultural and historical offering of New York as well.
Right.
And because of the major connections between New York and Ireland and between the East Coast and Ireland, going right up to, I suppose, Canada and Newfoundland, I think it's very significant. So I'm just delighted that there's something like $10 million now going to be spent in totally restoring the memorial. I think it's very, very important and very significant. And people like yourself, no doubt, following 9/11 and then afterwards when it was destroyed and your weather, that now is going to be restored. So
equally important, yes. Minister, is that the Quinnipiac management takeover commitment for decades to come will ensure that this will not be just a showpiece done in the shadow of the financial center, one block away from what is now the rebuilt Twin Towers. So we need that.
Well, it's a great relationship, and just to go back again, John Leahy, he should, I suppose, be recognized, especially both here in the USA, but also back in Ireland, for his contribution to the museum that's developed down below in Quinnipiac. And it would be a very exciting connection between Quinnipiac and the Famine Memorial here in New York, because obviously they would provide a lot of the academic backup.
Absolutely.
And the research for people who would like to make further inquiries or do further research into the famine in Ireland, because of the fact that...
Part of that arrangement, Minister, is that there will be an educational facility right across the street from the memorial, and that this will be run by Quinnipiac University. It is welcome, very welcome to Battery Park City Authority to actually have somebody come in and take and manage and give and commit to the significance of the Hunger Memorial. And this transcends politics and future authority changes. To have that taken over is next to the rebuilding.
It's very important, and also it's important for Quinnipiac as well, because obviously where they attract a large number of people to the museum, I think their connection here with the memorial in New York will further strengthen their position.
Absolutely.
And they will then bring their project right into the center of Manhattan, and they will attract more interest for the museum, and I'm convinced that it will lead to greater footfall too in their museum in Quinnipiac.
The difference this time, Minister, is that this is not a wish list. This is actually happening. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the rebuild. We're hoping that that this will be, in fact, ready for a rededication for next Easter. Coincidentally, the centenary celebration of 1916.
Yeah.
It's not built on that. However, that would bring us though to your filling us in on 1916 and the centenary.
Yeah, and that would be obviously another event to coincide with the commemorations of 1916, which is really very important here in New York and America, because New York had major involvement in 1916 and the lead up to it, because it provided people like John DeVay here in New York,
yes,
and Joe McGarity in Philadelphia, they were key figures in, first of all, providing finance for the Rising to buy guns and ammunition, but also in influencing people like Thomas Clark, people like Padraig Pearce, and very importantly so, Roger Casement. And Roger Casement came to New York, and he then, John Dubois convinced him to go to Germany, and Roger Casement went to Germany to form an Irish brigade out of the prisoners of war, the Irish prisoners of war, you know, from the First World War. And then he negotiated with the German government and succeeded in getting 20,000 rifles that were taken to Ireland on the Yard. And unfortunately, yeah, Casement went by submarine and things went wrong down in my own county of Kerry. But that was very significant. And Joe McGarrity played a very significant role as well, especially afterwards in the War of Independence and Civil War and subsequent events in the 20s. So they were two huge figures, and there are others as well. And there's a large, I suppose, collection of very important archive here stored, as you know, yes, in the American Irish Society.
In
Fifth Avenue. And yesterday evening, actually, I met the committee that are looking at now the commemorations and planning a program under Sister Marion Murphy. And I was delighted to meet them and just explain to them again that what they have in the Historical Society and what's in the New York Library here, and in other sources as well, here in other archives in the city, it's very important, because we are getting an opportunity now to put on public record as many primary sources as possible. And people will provide material now, because it's coming up to the centenary, that they may not have in the past. So it's so important that whatever material is available in private collections or public collections, yeah, here in New York and the greater New York area and the tri-state area will be provided. I am involved in doing a site called It's On Inspiring Ireland. That's a website of everybody, if anybody wants to look at it. It was launched last year, and we're doing a special project in 1916 that will be on Inspiring Ireland. So we want to get as much information that's there as possible, so that people will be able to go back to the primary source, the letters that were written at that time, the notes that were taken, direction given. And that's really very important, because obviously a lot of information in history, not just 1916, but other events in history as well, would be second-hand, sure, and interpretation. So what I'm very anxious to do is that we put on display, make available to people, those people who may have a casual interest or who may have an academic interest, put it online, make it available to the people. We can do a lot now digitally that we couldn't do before. Sure. And also, there's a lot more information available now for the 100th anniversary, the centenary, rather than the 50th anniversary. For example, two things that I released myself when I was minister with responsibility for commemorations, the statements that people who participated in the Easter Rising, they were in the military archive, so we put those online, and they're available now to anyone if they want to, if they had a relative that participated in the Easter Rising or afterwards in the War of Independence, there's that record there. Those statements were made by some of the leading figures, and they're quite interesting, especially for the Easter Rising. Then there's the pensions archive, and people that applied for the pension, for example, for service to the country, they had to write an application form, so they had to put on writing what they actually did during either the Easter Rising or the War of Independence in order to get a pension. So there are over 300,000 records there. So all of this information now is available that was not available before. So it's going to be very exciting. There are a large number of cultural events planned here in New York and other events. And the committee, it's a broadly based committee representative of all the organizations, historical community, and other organizations, the AOH, for example, here in New York, and it's quite exciting. And because of the role that New York played in the Easter Rising, the people here, I think it gives us a great opportunity now to commemorate those people who died for Ireland, who made that sacrifice. They knew they weren't going to win a military campaign. They were taking on the, I suppose, the mightiest empire in the world at that time. And they were making a statement for Ireland. And that's where we have now got our nationhood and our spirit of, our national spirit. And that's where our country has come at this stage. And I think we've done quite well. Could be better, of course, maybe. But at the same time, I think we've achieved a lot in that period of time since 1916 as a country. We are now firmly established as a nation in the world. We are widely respected in the United Nations. We are part of the European Union. And we are making an economic recovery as well that the people I meet here in New York, that I've met in different places and different communities, that I met down in Connecticut yesterday. I was down apart from Quinnipiac. I was also in Hamden yesterday.
Yes.
I was in Fairfield, for example, and I was down at the Gaelic American Club, and I met people there, and they're very happy that Ireland is making a great recovery. So people here are taking a major interest in Ireland, and the fact that we are now known to the world as a country of culture, as a country that participates in United Nations peacekeeping missions, and also the country that paid its way when it was challenged economically, and that's now creating jobs that hopefully will give the opportunity to people here in New York and elsewhere, if they want to return to Ireland, that they may have that opportunity now.
You know, over 30 years we have, and you have contributed greatly to this program, wearing many governmental hats in Ireland. There was one point where I think listeners to this program, and indeed many people in New York, thought that perhaps you were now biting off more than you could choose. When your government came in, inheriting, you know, the collapse, you know, the coma of the Celtic Tiger, and your positivity at that point in planning and telling that this is actually something that is going to happen, was, it was hard to understand. You just walked in the door. There is a new government. You didn't even know the extent at that point of how drastic the collapse of the Celtic Tiger was. And here you are saying, in our administration, we are going to take, no matter what this is, we're going to take that to what you know, you actually predicted. I don't know, there's a saying somewhere down in Kerry that must have been, that was a big statement to make. And it was a huge commitment at a time when people figured Ireland had its day. Sinead, it's gone.
Well, I suppose if you go back in that particular interview, I recall it well, we as a government decided on a line of action, and we stuck to it. And it was painful in many ways. It was difficult to be a member of cabinet. But we stuck to the agenda. We were criticized by people in the media, the public, because they had to make huge sacrifices. Public servants, for example, took a huge drop in salary at that particular time. And there wasn't a lot of noise on the streets. People took it, and it was painful. But now we're seeing the benefits of that. And at that time, we predicted that there would be a recovery. If we, for example, got our budget deficit, in other words, what we spent as opposed to what we took in, if we narrowed that gap, it sends out a message to the international financiers, the people that give us money to keep the country going, that we are now very serious about getting our financial, aspects of our running our country in order, and as a result now, our bonds are just yielding under 1%, whereas one time we were paying 15% for money.
Right.
That was unsustainable. Now it's less than 1%, and also that deficit of income over expenditure is down now to about, the end of this year would be about 2.7% from nearly 28% at one stage. And we haven't, in all fairness to the previous government, taken something like 30 billion out of expenditure, government expenditure, and that's a large sum of money for a country of 4.5 million. Mm-hmm. But from the point of view of restoring our competitiveness and also, restoring our credibility in the work in the world, in our financial markets, it has succeeded. And I suppose the proof is there. We are now providing more jobs than ever before. There have been, since an action plan for jobs was drawn up and announced, something like 95,000 jobs have been, new jobs have been created. So there'd be probably more working in Ireland shortly than ever before, even during the Celtic Tiger. And also, during the Celtic Tiger, the construction industry was major, like it is here in New York at the moment. I've never seen more cranes here in New York and more activity on the streets and more building going on. But our economy was about 25% dependent on revenue from the construction industry. One year alone, we took in $9 billion on tax from the construction industry. We built something like 90,000 units, so every unit was worth about 100,000 to the revenue. And then when that collapsed, the services that that money provided were still there, and they had to be kept going, but the revenue wasn't there to keep them going, so the money had to be borrowed, and then cutbacks had to be made, obviously, then on some of those services, which annoyed people and hurt people at that particular time. So at this moment, we are providing jobs. We are ahead of profile as regards taxation for 2015. It looks like in the spring statement that was made to the Dáil recently by both Michael Noonan, the Minister for Finance, and then Minister for Public Reform, Brendan Howland, that we will have maybe $1.5 billion to give back to people in reducing taxation, but and also to improve services and expenditure. So it'll be kind of half and half. So the outlook is quite positive at the moment. The only thing I would say, though, I would exercise caution because we are relying heavily on exports, United States being one of our main markets, and at the moment because of the strength of the dollar here, it suits us from the point of view of exporting here. The UK is a very important market. We are exporting all over the world. And some parts of the world that we are exporting into are that we are depending on, say, for example, that could affect energy prices, are in a state of turmoil at the moment, like the Middle East. So markets can be disturbed for various reasons. So we have to be very careful that we are very cautious about how we manage the gains that we're making in the economy and that we don't make the same mistakes as we made in the past. And the banks are becoming more, I suppose, stable now. The Bank of Ireland is certainly doing very well. The Bank of Ireland has paid back all the money the taxpayer gave it with interest, and still the state has a stake in it, 14%. The Allied Irish Bank, which was 99% taken over by the state, is now in a very fit condition, maybe to sell. But and the taxpayer will get back all the money that they put into the Allied Irish Bank.
Yes,
and all the investment actually that the present government made in bailing out the banks, the taxpayer will get it back, maybe with interest. Where the one bank, of course, was a total of that,
right,
was Anglo-Irish Bank,
yeah,
and that'll cost the taxpayer over $30 million eventually, and that obviously was a great disaster for the taxpayer. So the economy is going the right direction. There are people going back. For example, recently I launched with a number of people that came back from America, many from New York, in Dublin,
right.
IN Dublin. You have Irish International Network here in New York. Now they've formed one in Dublin for people who are returning from Dublin,
right,
from New York to Dublin. So that's very positive.
Before I forget it, though, I think that with all of the issues there that you have underlined, the fact that the global financial community has recognized that Ireland not only is in recovery, but holds the record for the for the short period of time that we're talking about. I think that probably lends more stability to Ireland today and to the future of Ireland. I mean, everything is great, but when you get world recognition of the financial stability and recovery, that says an awful lot.
Well, people, read Bloomberg and Forbes,
sure,
and the rating agencies like Moody's,
yeah,
and read the Financial Times, and they see a very positive commentary about Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a major confidence booster. And if somebody is looking to invest in Europe, for example, to set up their headquarters in Europe, American companies, and last year, incidentally, the idea attracted about 15,000 jobs, mostly from America.
Yeah.
And some major American companies set up their European headquarters in Dublin. And also Dell, they have now started a huge database center in Galway, outside near Athenry,
yeah,
in the middle of the forest. So that was really a very strong vote of confidence. But when people read about Ireland doing so well at the moment, with a growth rate now of 4.7% for last year, the top growth rate in Europe, and the likelihood that this will continue this year, we'll have the best growth rate in Europe. So this is all very positive news, and this is the type of news, the financial indicators, that investors look at when they're making a decision about investing in a country. And also, we're the only English-speaking country in the Eurozone. We are in the Eurozone, which is very important, so that gets over problems with currency.
Sure.
But also, we are very committed to the European Union, unlike maybe our neighbours, the UK. And there will be a referendum in the UK, whether they stay in Europe or not. So if somebody is setting up in Europe, if they want to get into that market of 550 million people who have very strong spending power, into a very developed part of the world, then they're looking at Ireland now, rather than going into an area where they don't speak the language, or going
it's
into...
still the gateway to Europe,
yeah,
particularly, but obviously from here.
Well, very much so, and it's not just tax that people go for, it's just the quality of our people, and also the approach of our people. And I must say that I'm meeting many of those young people here in New York, in Australia, even up in Newfoundland.
Sure.
There, I was there earlier this week, and they're confident, they're low-key, they're respectful, they're hardworking, they respect Ireland where they left, even though many of them were forced to leave, but they respect the country that they come to as well, and they want to contribute to that country, as they do so positively here in New York, for example. So we are producing very, very high quality individual at this moment of time in Ireland. It's come through we always did, of course, but because of our education system, because most of the people that are leaving Ireland now they have degrees, some of them have postgraduate degrees. The vast majority of them actually have some form of qualification, and that's helpful. That gives people confidence, and also they can enter into discussion with anyone in the world, irrespective of station in life or whatever. So we are producing a very confident group of people. So it gives me great hope for the future of our country. They're open-minded, they're accommodating, they understand that people would disagree with them, be from their own country or other countries. So it's the story at this moment, Adrian, is a very positive one as I see it. And I'm now 32 years in politics, and I've seen politics going in different directions. I've seen the Irish economy going down in the 80s. I was there in that period of time. I saw it rising again in the 90s, building up the crescendo in 2007. And then I saw the collapse, and nearly the total collapse of our economy, only for our friends internationally that came in to help us. We wouldn't have had money to run the country. We had to get money, $350 million every week from the IMF, from the ECB and the European Commission to run the country. And people came in from all over the world, including the USA, and provided funding for that temporary funding. Of course, we'll pay it back.
It was, yes. And it was not Graham McCree. It was not the, you know, the hat in hand. I think the confidence was there. It is great to be sympathetic to a disaster that, frankly, the Irish citizens did not deserve, that a new government is coming in, inheriting all of that. But it is, when it comes down to it, money does not come in if people do not have the confidence that, A, they're going to get it back. And that has happened.
Well, the good thing about it, we've paid our debts, and Irish people traditionally like to pay their debts. And that is really standing to us now. But certainly, if we had defaulted, then if we went back looking for money to those individuals, banks, major banks mostly, then obviously they'd be very reluctant to give it to us. And what I would like to say as well, that we are getting a great opportunity now. I certainly wouldn't like to be going back to people again in the future if we missed that opportunity. If we are, again, if our economy will go through another turbulent period, if there's a collapse because of our own actions, obviously economies are cyclical, but if we regress in our approach, and if we then experience difficulty in the future because of our own actions, then I don't think we get the same kind of sympathy out there in the international markets or from our friends like in the USA and Europe, UK, as we did in the past. And actually, I was in Newfoundland there early in the week, but say, for example, Jim Flaherty, he was the Minister for Finance in the Canadian government, a great friend of Ireland's, and unfortunately he got a heart attack and passed away. But he was one of the early people in to support Ireland at that time, and he got funding for Ireland when it was very difficult to get funding anywhere in the world. And it's people, friends like him and the friends that we have in Capitol Hill, that really helped to bring Ireland back.
Absolutely. You know, had I introduced you as the Minister for the Diaspora, we wouldn't have probably have had an opportunity to talk about things that are, you know, the progress that is being made. We wouldn't get a chance, for instance, to talk, as you have done very positively, with respect to a couple of things. Not only the export into the United States, but the goodwill and, in fact, the ever-increasing number of tourists who are going to Ireland, regardless of how the economy is. But Ireland has that magnetism for North America like no other country.
Well, last year was a record year. 1.35 million tourists went to Ireland from America. This year will even be better because of the exchange rate between the dollar and the euro. There's really very good value now. And also, we became more competitive in Ireland too. Prices came down. accommodation kind of came down. And for a while there, we were nearly on par with, Dublin was nearly the same as New York, and accommodation here is very expensive in New York because there's a huge demand here, and it's hard to get a bed here at times at the moment. But we couldn't have the same kind of level of pricing on hotel rooms like you'd have in a place like New York. But now it's very competitive, and price now is on par with the rest of Europe and indeed the rest of the world, apart from centres like New York, where there's huge demand. And also in Ireland, our transport system, you know, has definitely improved. And then access to Ireland has improved considerably. The present government, they reduced travel tax to zero. And actually, some people resented paying travel tax.
I know, yeah.
And they've reduced it to zero. And there was a commitment given by Ryanair, by its chief executive, Michael O'Leary, that he would bring in 1 million extra tourists into Ireland if it was scrapped. Well, we didn't scrap it, we reduced it to zero. And it's happening. Already the figures are ahead of schedule for this year, ahead of profile, ahead of expectation. And this will be the greatest year ever for the numbers of people coming to Ireland for holidays. So that's very heartening. And also, more Irish people are spending time in Ireland. They're taking their holidays, which is very important, in Ireland. And rather than going for sun holidays, they're taking holidays in Ireland. We've been a bit fortunate, really, that over the last 3 years, ever since, actually, President Obama came to the G8 summit up in Fermanagh, the weather changed that time. And for the last 3 years, we've had very good summers.
We know about it with our weekly link into Ireland. You've been ahead. You've been ahead of us so much in terms of very moderate and temperatures.
We've had a really a splendid winter. People didn't just feel the winter. It was as if we didn't have a winter.
Stop pricking us because we've had.
We've had
the worst winter ever here. But indeed, you know. Traditionally, and tongue-in-cheek, was always, you go to Ireland and expect rain around the clock. It's an added bonus. But also, we have to say that, particularly in the area of tourism, we are talking about tourism to the island of Ireland, which is very significant.
It is. Well, Tourism Ireland is a cross-border agency set up by UK and the Irish government to promote all of the island of Ireland as one destination. Last night then I was at the American Ireland Fund, and that was a spectacular event, and I was just delighted that George Mitchell was honoured. I know he's been recognised before now, but the contribution he made to peace in Northern Ireland was quite unique, and he showed great patience there and tolerance and sensitivity to both sides during those negotiations.
Right.
And it started the
40th anniversary. I don't want to talk over you, but it was the 40th anniversary of the American Ireland Fund.
That's right, yeah.
And we were delighted to have Dan Rooney there. It would have been even been greater if Tony O'Reilly didn't throw his back out or have surgery.
Yeah.
But 40 years, $500 million raised through the...
It's quite extraordinary, and I'm aware of communities that benefited from the funds. I was involved in some of those myself the years.
Yeah.
And certainly, it's positive as well, and it's very heartening that last night was one of their most successful...
$4.3 million raised at one dinner in one evening, breaking all records.
Yeah, and I would just like to thank the hospitality of the people of New York and beyond. They've been very generous, and I'd just like to recognize that. and the work that they have achieved through the fund in Ireland, the projects they have initiated have been very important. But just to finish, I suppose, later on today I'll be meeting people here from Queen's University in Belfast, so I see myself very much minister, I suppose, for all of the Irish diaspora, irrespective of what
that's
part of the Irish diaspora.
And the new Chancellor, Tom Moran.
That's right. So, and then I'm going to be meeting with Bergen County Executive today in Hackensack and in New Jersey.
Right.
So I'll be going out to New Jersey later on. And then I'm doing a very important function tomorrow.
Today being Saturday, the in Persephone tonight, there is something extraordinary happening, and your involvement and your encouragement with Coltus Kiltory,
yep.
Aaron didn't start today or yesterday, and was not reliant upon your being minister for the diaspora.
No, I'm president of the local branch in Finnoog, and I'm just a huge supporter of Coltus and what they have achieved, and I was delighted that in government I was able to ensure that the funding for Coltus was ring-fenced in the estimates.
Right.
And I'm a very good friend of Larasa Marcuse, for example. And also I'm delighted that Bill McAvoy has been honoured. He was the man that founded Coltus Kiltory in America. He's married to a cousin of mine. So that, of course, increases my interest in Bill.
Not that I need much of an excuse indeed to go to Ireland, but now I have a very legitimate one in that I have to go over and continue this conversation with Minister for the Diaspora, and indeed somebody who I'm proud to know as a friend. So, Jimmy Dinahan, good luck to you. And, you know, as you travel throughout the world, you don't have to tell them that there's a soft spot for the East Coast of the United States and New York, and definitely they won't be hearing it from us. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Adrian. Thank you.
Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.